Welcome to Nourished by Spinneys, the podcast which promises to inspire you to eat well and live well. I'm Devina Devecha.
And I'm Tiffany Eslick. Welcome to a space where we hope to nourish your heart and soul. On the show, we chat with leading players in the food community, from farmers to foodies, as well as health and well-being experts. It's all about engaging conversations and fresh ideas.
So we've had quite the week here in the UAE.
Indeed. Dubai and, well, the UAE received the highest rainfall since we started recording this data all the way back in 1949. This also means we're recording away from our spinny studio today. Were you able to stay safe indoors, Davina?
I was, yes. And I am really glad we postponed our recording as well. Dealt with a few leaks, some gushing water here and there. But overall, managed to get through it and very grateful for that. How about you, Tiff?
Well, luckily, I escaped all of this nonsense. I was in Scotland and England for work. And I got back super, you know, my flight was a bit delayed. I got back to a flooded apartment. So I guess I didn't escape this. And all I did was just go to sleep and deal with it 5 hours later after I got over my bit of jet lag.
Hopefully sleep helps a little bit with the situation. But, you know, it's been great to see the emergency response really take it up a notch. Roads getting cleared, getting people to shelter as well. I even saw a few videos about the Dubai police team rescuing a cat that was like hanging onto a car. So that was really sweet. We're obviously, you know, returning to normalcy as much as possible here, and hope that's true for everyone who's listening to us as well.
Yes, I also saw that cat video. Yeah. And I mean, I had to, you know, I don't really like cats, but I had to like really, like my heart felt it. All right, let's get into our episode.
So today I'm chatting with Chef Apisit Pongsama. I hope I'm saying it right, but he's also called AJ. So we're going to stick to that for the rest of the episode. He's the man behind the legendary Naga, which is what he describes as a culinary union between Laos, Persia, GCC, and the Levant.
That is quite a combination that I don't think I've seen before.
Yeah. And what's interesting about this concept as well is that it's a reflection of his own rich story as someone who grew up in Toronto while his parents are from Laos. He's also had such an amazing journey. He's worked at David Chang's Momofuku in Toronto, as well as the Waldorf Astoria in New York. And now he's in Dubai and he's been doing pop-ups and collabs with loads of chefs from across the country, such as Chef Faisal from Lento, whom we've also had on the show before.
He also beat me at the Spinneys Warburton Toasty Challenge last year. I'm not bitter about that at all.
No, you're not. I can see that. But did you know he also raps?
Raps?
Yeah, so he actually used to be a music producer in a previous life. He writes poems, he performs them as spoken word, or he just raps them. So it's really quite something.
Yeah. I used to, so before I was a
chef.
This
is a lot.
Oh my gosh, you're digging deep. So back in Canada, I used to, you know, partake in beat battles, and I used to be in the studio with like recording artists and whatnot, and I think I have a track or two on the radio back in Toronto, like a long time ago as a young adolescent.
Okay.
So Davina, as our resident supper club expert, yes, I just made up that title, how was the legendary Naga?
Yeah, so I attended their iftar pop-up at Maison 15 last year in 2023, and my mind was genuinely blown away. It blended Laotian and Persian cuisine really well, and beyond the flavors and the textures, just all working in sync together, it was all about the storytelling. Insider scoop, by the way, he plans to open a sit-down space later this summer.
We're all about the inside scoop on this podcast.
Yes, but let's go to the beginning of his journey. AJ was born in Canada, and his parents were refugees from Laos.
And out of survival mode, they got into the F&B industry. Fast forward a few years, my aunts and uncles opened up restaurants of their own. And it just took off from there. I worked within the family business at a very, very young age, like started off from the very bottom at the dish pit as a child, like super child labor, honestly. So you would see this like little Asian kid on a milk crate doing dishes with a commercial dish machine. And then the Toronto municipality, every time they would come and do inspections, I'd have to hop off.
Oh my God.
Yeah, okay. Pretend to do my homework which I did complete. And then I'd have to hop back on again when they left. And then I just moved up the ranks as a busser, server, and then back in the kitchen for prep and then line. And that's how I got the bug of hospitality in F&B.
And then since then, you've been working in different restaurants and hotels as well.
Oh, yeah. So after that, I had a stint in post-secondary in engineering, which didn't turn out. My dad was upset, but my mom wasn't because she's a chef. So after that, I went to culinary school, did the whole, you know, typical stage, Michelin, et cetera. Yeah. And then I worked for a very lovely fellow named David Chang at Momofuku in Toronto. And then I moved to New York as a chef de cuisine for the Waldorf Hotel. And then I made my way to Dubai.
And how's that journey been like since you've come to this region and kind of explored the culinary scene here as well?
It's been interesting. I'd have to say there is plenty of opportunity here. You know, you don't necessarily have to work in just a restaurant. You know, as you know, for Spinney's, they have a really great F&B program.
Yeah.
With the ready-made meals and at the counter. And, you know, there's so many avenues in the UAE that you can pursue F&B without having to work in a restaurant or a hotel, per se. Even as a consultant myself right now, you know, a lot of businesses reach out to me, whether it's product development, menu development, team development, et cetera. Like, the world is your oyster here in the UAE.
No, that's great. And I think one of the things that you've been doing that I think people have been keeping an eye on is the legendary Naga. And I'd love for you to tell us more about that concept because, I mean, I've only tried it through your version at an iftar supper club last year.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And it was a fabulous experience. You know, me and my friend, we just couldn't stop gushing over the flavors, the textures, because it was not just about the food, which was, correct me if I'm wrong, it was Laos and Persian cuisine kind of mixed together, the inspiration.
Mainly.
And there was storytelling to the side as well. There was artwork. There was that menu with the story. It's fascinating because it was done really well. So yeah, just tell us a little bit more about the legendary Naga.
So with the legendary Naga, that came about when I was working at my family restaurants back in the day. And there's this one particular dish that always piqued my interest, and that is gang masaman curry, Thai masaman curry. There were spices in there that were vibrant to my taste buds, you know, cumin, fennel, nutmeg, cinnamon, and boom, boom, boom. And these are spices that you wouldn't normally have in Lao and Thai cuisine.
Right.
You know, it's an influence from abroad. And I asked my aunts and my mom, and they gave me various answers. And with my own research, I found out that masaman is kind of like a bastardization of the word Muslimman.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true, but that's what some food researchers have said.
Yeah.
But there's one thing for certain, and that is masaman curry has Arabic Muslim influences from the spices.
Yeah.
So I was like, wait a second, if this dish came from that, how come there are no other dishes like that?
Right.
So as a young child, I was like, oh my gosh, what if I, you know, I had a vivid imagination. I still do.
Yeah.
So I was like, why don't I just create dishes that played upon that context, but in a thoughtful way? You know, for instance, you can have a Russian burrito. That's cool, right? But then, like, does it make sense? So my philosophy is, when I'm creating something, it has to make sense. So I just went down the rabbit hole of the West Asia region in terms of Iran, the Levant, GCC, even Pakistan and India. And I looked at the food and the recipes, and I looked at the story, the history, you know, regarding the Silk Road and the spice trade. And I just somehow put things together, like, and you've tasted in a thoughtful way that made sense and it wasn't wacky.
I think what was also great was, you know, you do the storytelling and that concept yourself. And I think the artwork that day, for example, was also yours.
Yeah. So that artwork that day was from me. I'm an amateur painter, an illustrator, a poet. I've been writing poetry since, you know, I've been fascinated with literature and poetry, and as you know, we follow each other on social media, and I post poems all the time. So I wanted to have
and
this.
And sometimes you're performing them as well, because I remember once there was like, it was, I can't remember if it was a spoken word style or a rap style, but you went into it. I just thought, wait, is this him? Is he actually doing this?
Yeah, I do perform spoken word.
That's amazing.
Every now and then. So at that particular event that you were at for Iftar, I created a short story involving the legendary Naga, which was a fictional story about a character who was a Naga. And for those of you that don't know, to a Buddhist in Southeast Asia, the Naga is a divine deity, a water serpent dragon that we believe in. You know, they're found in rocks, rivers, stones, and every object imaginable, and they protect you. And the story was based upon the Naga, who was fighting an evil dragon from Persia at the time. And I don't want to give too much into it, but, you know, the character is reincarnated in Persia and has to find his way back home. And there's just a lot of intrigue and drama and whatnot.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And each of the courses on that night coincided with a paragraph of the story. So yeah. As you read the story, each dish progresses with that.
Yeah, no, I remember because me and my friend were like, okay, we can't read the next paragraph yet. We have to wait for this dish because he said so. And it was just, I think it's such an engaging way of kind of involving, you know, guests at whatever concept you have into the food as well. It's not just, I mean, it's perfectly fine if it's just a plate of food, but there was just so much more to it that I think, you know, it was appreciated. And is the legendary Naga a concept? Kind of something that you want to take forward. I think you have some plans for it or to push Lao cuisine as well.
Certainly. I feel that, number one, I do want to pursue the legendary Naga as a more refined arm of my food. And then I have a casual arm, which is Al Naka. So that is more of like large silver tray platters of coconut saffron rice laced with toasted cashews and mint. And then you have my grandma's double fried chicken, no batter. And then you have kubi de kebabs, Lao style with lemongrass, kaffir lime leaf tinged throughout, spicy chutneys. Oh,
that sounds great.
Yeah, so that's the casual arm. And then the more refined arm, the legendary Naga, is what you've had.
Yeah.
So I would like to pursue those later on in life, hopefully soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other thing, you know, just now when you were talking about the food, for example, ingredients obviously play a super important role as well, because, you know, that makes the difference into what flavor we are tasting. Can you talk a little bit more about ingredients and kind of, you know, your approach to them in your cooking?
So when I think of ingredients, I also think of sustainability, and there are certain ingredients that are must-haves, like lemongrass and kaffir lime leaf, which we don't get in the region. But I try so hard to emphasize on the fact that if I can substitute something that makes sense, that I can get here rather than have it being imported, then I will do that. For example, I will use chickpeas instead of rice from back home,
okay,
you know, from this region, or lentils, you know. So I would say if I were to think of a dish that really was encompassing that idea, it would have to be this coconut curry that I made from lentils and chickpeas.
Okay.
Yeah. As opposed to using ingredients from back home. And yeah. And it's relatable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's relatable for guests to see something like that. And they're like, wow, this is unique. You know, the flavor is different, but the ingredients I can recognize.
And was that a challenge in terms of trying to find these substitutes or trying to make sure that the flavor still makes sense while still thinking about, you know, that sustainable angle?
It was a challenge. Still is. Yeah. And it'll forever be a challenge because it's not easy to substitute ingredients and make sure that they make sense from a sustainability standpoint, a taste standpoint, texture standpoint, aesthetics. You know, there's a lot of R&D that goes into this. And not only that, but I have everyone in my inner circle taste it with an honest review. Like, you know, tell me straight up, because I don't have an ego. If you say, hey, this sucks, I'm like, okay, cool. Why does it suck?
Yeah.
Let me fix it. Tell me, let's go.
I think one of the things that I've seen since you know, I guess following you on social media, is I've seen that, you know, you do a lot of collab work with other chefs in the country. And it's kind of great to see, I mean, for me, every time, like just when the community does come together. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the work you've done with other chefs?
Yeah, sure. So from the very beginning, every time I work with a fellow colleague who have now become close, great friends, it's always like, yo, let's do something fun. No, for real. It's like, hey, let's have some fun. I'm like, okay, let's do it. Right now I'm working with Faisal from Lento.
Yeah.
We have a concept called kebab, which is using the idea of taking kebabs from this region and infusing Southeast Asian flavors from my region. And then his bread, his khubiz, you know, his sauces and whatnot. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful creation. And I'm also working with Chef JP from Kuya. There is a concept that we've been doing pop-ups with, which is like a Filipino barbecue chicken concept. And every now and then, I work with Chef Rita. We like to bring our minds together and our hearts together to create more dishes along the Levant Southeast Asian route.
You know, Faisal's been on the podcast as well. And I just love seeing sometimes when you guys post together, you're like you said, you just look like you're having fun. That's all you're doing. And it's
for
great.
Real. That's all it is. People are like, hey, is there a strategy? Like, no, we just go and have fun. Like, we're both musicians as well.
Yeah.
We're into like everything from electronic to R&B and hip hop. And, you know, and we have these musical devices like beat machines, drum machines, keyboards, and we'll just bring them into the kitchen or the stock room and we'll just make music on the fly and record it and just have fun. You know what? When I think about music and poetry and writing and painting, I still do that because it keeps me grounded as a chef. Why? Because it's like when I take the analogy of painting and illustrating, just because you have 100 colors on the palette doesn't mean you should use them. So as a chef, just because you have the accessibility and the range of 1,000 ingredients doesn't mean you should use them. Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Right? When I'm making music, when I'm doing a production for a beat, if you put too many instruments, too many sounds, melodies, harmonies, frequencies, it muddies up the mix, right? So you have to take away, take away, take away. So I'm a big fan of simplifying things. And Faisal says himself, simplify to amplify.
You can listen to our episode with Chef Faisal Nasser in your podcast app. You'll also find a link in our show notes. We will be right back with Chef AJ right after the short break.
We wanted to take a minute to tell you about our delicious Spinneys food olive oil, which comes from the 120-year-old Basso family farms in Italy, which is now a fifth-generation business. Davina, if you remember my masterclass with Matthew Jones of Bread Ahead, this is the olive oil we use to make the focaccia.
I remember that. It was delicious.
Yes, and part of the reason for that is their use of the Arbequino olive grown in Italy. Here's Federico Basso.
The Arbequino olive is usually used in blends because it's very sweet and it has that almond taste, which is very different from the typical strong Italian olive oils that we have. So we use it in blend in order to provide our customers with a product that is as balanced as possible. So it's not too aggressive, but it's also not too plain. We want to find the perfect match in order to satisfy our clients, also in terms of organoleptic features of our products.
Here's a fun fact. Federico's father, Sabino, eats extra virgin olive oil and bread every morning for breakfast, sometimes with a spoonful of sugar.
And didn't you say that he's run many marathons? Clearly, that's the trick.
We source their extra virgin olive oil, a truffle-infused EVU, and a signature Mediterranean blended oil as well. So you should definitely grab a bottle of Spinneys Food olive oil the next time you're in store and tell us what you think.
Welcome back. I'm Devina Devetra and you're listening to Nourished by Spinneys and my conversation with Chef Abhishit Pongsava of the legendary Naga. What is the life cycle, I guess, of a dish for you? So you have an idea, you obviously go into R&D. How long does it take before, or on average really, before you say, yes, that's the dish I want on this menu?
Sure. So it varies, right? If you hit it off the mark, then perfect. But I've never, ever have I made a dish and was like, oh, that's it. Let's go.
Are you a perfectionist?
I am.
Yeah.
I am. As most chefs would, you know, say, and, you know, but at the same time, you have to be a realist. You know, so you want to strive for perfection, but you have to be efficient with it. There's a balance. I lead my life with balance all the time. You know, I've been a monk a few times in my life with the legendary Naga. You know the story with the monk and whatnot. And balance to me is important. You know, you can strive for perfection, but if you're losing efficiency, then what's the point? Mm. You know, and if you're always being efficient with no creativity, then what's the point? You know.
Yeah. But no, sorry, going back to the life cycle of your dish.
Yes.
Sorry, I distracted you.
No worries. Life cycle, I would say on average, about 2 weeks to perfect a dish. Oh. And, you know, I'll go back to a dish. I'll start it and then maybe give it a few days to let it ferment in my head and marinate and then go back at it again. And sometimes I'll be out and about at work or doing something and then I'll be, oh, you know what? Oh, gosh, that would have been amazing. Let's try that. And then I can't wait to go back home and then tinker.
Right now for you, what's keeping you busy? Like, what are you working on? You know, what other either pop-ups or concepts should we be looking forward to?
So there's going to be a lot more pop-ups coming up this year.
Okay, yay.
And also my consultancy. So I am also an F&B consultant with my own agency. And in the pipeline is Alnaka, which is my casual silver tray platter concept, you know, and what's also interesting is another dish on that menu, which is going to be like biryani noodles.
Ooh.
So, you know, a lot of people eat Maggi noodles, etc., and there's a biryani flavor. But in Laos, there are these chewy rice noodles, and my grandmother's recipe is fantastic. And I've taken that recipe and I've made my grandmother's chewy rice noodles and I douse them with my own biryani gravy with roasted local UAE pumpkin. So that's also on the menu. So that concept is coming soon.
My mouth is actually watering. No one can hear this or see this, but it is happening right now. So that sounds great. What else are you working on?
That, and then like I said, so I have the pop-ups, I have my consultancy, and I have the casual restaurant opening soon. And then after that casual restaurant, hopefully I will get to open up the legendary Naga. Fine dining. I wouldn't say super fine dining, but more of a refined concept, which is what I mainly do.
Yeah.
And I would like to push for that.
Is that something that you've kind of wanted since the start of your journey, perhaps even as a consultant, to have your own concept, your own restaurant?
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would say it's crazy, even my parents, because, you know, my family having three restaurants and me being in the industry at a young age, I know how hard it is. Your parents never want you to take the hard path.
Mm.
But to me, it's not the hard path, it's the fun path. You know what I mean? It's to me, having a restaurant is more than just cooking food and serving guests. It's this amalgamation of crazy chaos that just becomes refined when all of these ragtag individuals come together, back of house, front of house, management team, and you just get it done. You know, it just, when you have a smooth service, you're in the zone, it's a beautiful experience, you know.
Yeah,
that's what I strive for.
So right now with your consulting as well, I wanted to ask, what's your favorite, I guess, part about being a consultant in F&B, especially over here?
As a consultant, what I bring to the table, my philosophy is kind of different, where I bring a lot of empathy. I bring a lot of emphasis on the team members. For me, when people go into the workplace, into the kitchen or front of house, into the dining room area, there's no separation of personal life and work life. To me, there isn't. You're always the same. I don't like the idea of clocking in and clocking out with a ticket. You always are the same person. So for me, I like to make sure that my team members are sound in body and mind and spirit before they step into the workplace. Because a lot of the problems that I see here in the industry, in F&B, can be solved if the individual, the team member themselves, is in sound mind, body, and spirit. They bring a lot of the problems from home into the workplace and you're trying to force them to separate that, but it doesn't work like that. You know, we're humans. You cannot shut off problems. But if you help them, if you give them the tools, it's more of an HR challenge. Mm. If you can help your team members become better humans and they become better chefs, then they become better servers, they become better supervisors, better managers.
Yeah.
That is my philosophy when it comes to consulting. So I try to put those inflections into my consultancy.
It sounds like as it should be, that mental health is something that's very important to you, because you've talked about that. You've talked about balance as well.
100%.
Yeah. Do you think that's an issue in the industry as a whole?
Oh, yeah. Globally, 100%. Yeah. I've had a lot of colleagues throughout the years that I've seen go down a very dark hole with, you know, illegal substances and narcotics. You know, I've never even smoked a cigarette in my life. But I've seen that, and it's very terrible. And it's because there is no balance. There's that traditional ideal that chefs and servers and everybody in the F&B industry should just slog through it, should just graft and work hard, which you should. I work hard like crazy, but you also have to realize balance. Mm. Because if you push yourself to the limit, you're broken, and then you just lose more time trying to get back to that point.
Yeah,
I believe there's an Irish proverb that I always remember. It's like sometimes you must stop to sharpen the scythe before you continue to cut. Because if you use your mind and your body like a knife in the kitchen, and you're using it so much and it gets dull, you can't go on, or else you're just going to cut yourself and make mistakes. So you have to stop, take a break, sharpen the knife, go back again. Balance.
I wanted to change tax a little bit and ask you maybe a little more lighthearted question. A little bit. Do you have a favorite ingredient that you like to cook with?
Oof.
Is this like asking you to choose your favorite child? Because your face just went, ugh.
Yes, because, oh my gosh. You know, my number one favorite ingredient would have to be sticky rice.
Okay, yeah.
Khaunio, glutinous rice. It's so versatile. You know, in Lao cooking, Lao and Northern Thai cooking, we use it not only to steam and eat as is, we can use it to ferment. We use it for making fermented sausages.
Okay.
We use it for making fermented vegetables. We can toast it and then grind it and use it for powder, for lap, which a lot of people call it larb.
Yeah.
Lap, the salad dish. We can use it in desserts, right? It's so versatile, sticky rice. So I would have to say that as an ingredient is my number one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you're not, you know, cooking and, you know, being a creative person with your art or your words, do you like to go out and eat at other places as well? Like, do you have kind of favorite cuisines or kind of places you go back to, perhaps here even?
So if I do have time, yes, yeah. I do like to go out and enjoy a meal with friends or my wife, Steph. I find myself, not because Rita is a friend, but I'm being serious. I always find myself going back to Maison 15 because of the ambiance, the team members there, the menu is just so straightforward, the prices are affordable, the quality is on point. Like when you look at quality versus price point, it is amazing. And the flavors and the textures are wonderful. And she's such an angel to her team. Like she's always teaching them and training them and loving them, you know? So I love to be around that environment.
Yeah.
Aside from Maison 15, there's a place that a friend of mine, Glenn, and I like to go to near the beach area. It's Eat and Drink.
Yeah, okay.
It's
so
simple. You know, it's so simple. Like,
love that.
There's a lot of cafeteria places around, but it's just so close to us. So we just like to go there. You can't go wrong with like a 30 dirham grilled sea bass, something like that. And, you know, local UAE fish cooked, whatever, you know, and it's,
Yeah, that sounds like fun. Very random fact, Maison 15 is actually now our new spot for my writing club. So we recently switched locations. So we're going to, I'm basically there like every 2 or 3 weeks.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you a question.
Oh.
Why did you pick Maison 15?
We wanted somewhere that was chilled out, not super noisy, decent service.
Yeah.
And some people want to eat when we meet up. Some people just want to have good coffee.
Yeah.
And it was also like kind of, we wanted a point that worked for everyone.
Yeah.
So it was an amalgamation of factors, but it's just a comfortable spot to be in. So
there you have it, folks. You see, I said my piece. Dee said her piece.
I agreed with you.
There you go.
That was good. What is it that nourishes your soul?
Giving. Giving in any shape and form. A lot of my family members and my friends would know me as such, to the point where sometimes I give too much, and that is the balance that I'm still trying to find. I've been told that I should think up for myself more often, which I don't. I always give, and it's probably something that my family and my parents have instilled in me. It's a positive and a negative, you know, positive because how else can we make the world go round if we don't give, you know, in love? But negative, because I don't give myself enough time and love.
Balance,
which I'm trying hard to find. We'll get there.
Okay. Well, that's it. Thank you very much for your time, and I'm glad we could all make it here today.
So, yeah, we made it dry.
We made it dry.
Thank you very much for having me.
This episode was brought to you by Spinneys and is hosted by me, Devina Devecha, and Tiffany Eslick. We're produced by Chirag Desai. You can follow Spinneys on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok for more, and visit us at spinneys.com, where you can shop for fresh produce and a variety of local and exclusive products.
We'll be back with a new episode in a couple of weeks. Stay safe, everyone.